This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. The word hero is thrown around much too often these days, but my guest tonight has been a hero on so many fronts, it fits him just fine. Four-time Super Bowl champion Rocky Blyer was one of the many former NFL players who came out to this week's game between the Wounded Warriors amputee football team and the 9/11 first responders at Cody Arena in West Orange, New Jersey. Before the game, Rock was swarmed by fans who wanted pictures and autographs. He signed them all with pride and a class that just pours out of him. It's kind of ironic that Rocky Blyer was the only member of the Steelers' backfield back in the glory days of the 1970s who did not make the Hall of Fame.
And now, let's meet the starting offensive lineups. First, the AFC champions, the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh backs. Running back number 20, Rocky Blyer. Running back number 32, Franco Harris. Quarterback number 12, Terry Bradshaw.
While you won't see a bust of Rocky Blyer at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, his story is amazing and inspiring. It started with a national championship at the University of Notre Dame in 1966, and then being named captain of the Fighting Irish the year after. In his 1968 rookie season with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Blyer was drafted into the U.S. Army, and in May of 1969, the Steelers running back was wounded by gunfire in a rice paddy in Vietnam. And then an enemy grenade landed nearby when his platoon was ambushed, sending shrapnel into his lower right leg. He was told eventually by doctors he might not walk again. When Rocky Blyer returned to the United States, he was later awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star. The 180-pounder never gave up and eventually returned to the Steelers, where he and fellow running back Franco Harris would help the Steelers win four Super Bowls in the 1970s. Blyer wrote a popular book on his life, Fighting Back, and it was made into a television movie in 1980.
He dreamed of a career in football.
You were drafted.
But it was cut short by a bullet.
If I never play football again, I want to find that out on the field.
Now, Rocky Blyer is fighting back.
He got hurt in the war, but that doesn't mean I want him on my football team.
He's a cripple.
Rocky, I'm putting you on waivers.
But nothing will keep him from his goal.
You're beating them all.
Art Carney and Robert Urich. The true story of Rocky Blyer fighting back.
Earlier this week, I had a chance to catch up with Rocky Blyer at the Cody Arena in West Orange, where we talked about not only his career, but the upcoming Super Bowl 48. We're here with the great Rocky Blyer here on Sports Jam. Rock, it's great to see you. What an inspiration you are to so many people here at this charity game. What are your thoughts as you see so many people come out to honor not only the wounded veterans, but the 9/11 first responders?
Well, you know, I think it really is an indication of how we feel about people who respond to the needs of our country. So if you go back to 2001 and the 9/11 first responders and, you know, and how we felt about their sacrifice without even thinking to do the things that they did because of their commitment to not only their job, but then to their city and to their responsibility. And, of course, our young soldiers who do the same thing, you know, who have joined the service, knowing that we've got the conflict that is going on all these many years, who continue to serve in the Reserves National Guard, who will go on deployments time and time again, and ultimately may suffer injuries, as our wounded warriors here tonight have suffered theirs. But given both sets of people, it's a great inspiration for all the fans who have come here to kind of an uplifted hope, you know, to see people who have done something really and committed something with their lives and to give back and more importantly to see them go out and have some fun and compete against one another.
How wonderful is it to say Rocky Blyer, Pittsburgh Steelers, you could have said Notre Dame too, and U.S. Army?
You know, I should say that it's all in the same breath, you know. It's a great honor to have served, obviously, to have been able to play at the University of Notre Dame and be a part of that great tradition and then go on and create a tradition or be a part of a group that created a tradition, you know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so when you look at it all in total, I'm a very blessed person to have had that whole experience.
I was recently asked, what was my favorite Super Bowl moment? It was your catch in the end zone, Rock.
It was mine, too.
No, it should be. What a catch that was.
Third and one. Bradshaw throws. Touchdown.
Oh, my Lord.
Touchdown. Number 20, Rocky Blyer. Blyer, a very underrated player on the Steelers, made an amazing catch there in front of D.D. Lewis.
I am not believing, Kurt, the way that Bradshaw not only laid the ball up, but the movement of Blyer to get to the ball.
You know, it was a broken play. Actually, it wasn't a formed play. It was a broken play, and I found myself in the end zone, and Bradshaw was scrambling when we kind of met, you know, across the field, and he saw me. And I thought, in all honesty, he was trying to throw the ball away up over my head, and I thought, well, if I could just jump high enough, if I could just get my fingers on it, maybe I can tip it, you know, stop it, and get it. Well, I went up there, and when I felt the thud in between my hands, I go, oh, man, you know, I got this ball. So I don't know how high I was. I mean, ultimately, my teammates say that I could only jump 4 inches. I think I was 18, 19 feet. There's some discrepancy, but that's how I felt.
With that adrenaline, could it have been the highest you ever jumped?
Probably was. I know. I know it. I know it was the highest I've ever jumped over somebody's head. But anyway, that's what I did.
We have the Super Bowl here in New Jersey coming up, and as a four-time Super Bowl champion, are you okay with it being in New Jersey outdoors in this kind of weather?
You know, I think at first, you know, everybody was concerned about the weather, you know, as we now look, you know, and the weather is going to be fairly good. I think it's going to be in the 30, you know, or higher. Could I think, you know, rain on Saturday and then the game Sunday, by the time it'd be 30 some degrees. That's not bad playing. I think the biggest thing was the possibilities of the elements, meaning it could have really blizzarded, or that rain turn into sleet, or a wind come up, off the water. It's just something that could change the tempo of the game. But I think that, you know, it was not cold, except for the fans, but that's their problem. You know, from the players' perspective, they got adrenaline, they're focused, they understand, they've played in bad weather before, but I just don't want the elements to affect the game, and cold weather is not one of the elements, and so I look at it to be a really good contest.
I started thinking about, well, how many Super Bowls could the well, you won every one that you played in, Rock, so it didn't matter if it was outdoors in bad weather or not, you won in good weather.
Well, you know, we actually, the coldest Super Bowl on record was ours in Super Bowl IX at Tulane Stadium. It was like 41 degrees. And people had asked me that question. That's why I only know. Coming into this game, what was it like? It was perfect. I said it was perfect. It was perfect for us. I mean, now the fans might have been cold or chilly as they complained about that weather. But for the players' perspective, I mean, you were focused. That weather didn't make any difference. It was just the right temperature. And so this one, you know, will be a little less. But I think that the players will come back afterwards. Did the weather affect you? I don't think anyone will ever complain about it being outside or it being cold. It's the Super Bowl. You play it. Both teams have to play it, so there's no whining about what happens. And I think both teams are very focused on what needs to be done. So I'm looking for a great game.
Whether it be ice, snow, water, Rocky Blyer walks on all of them in Pittsburgh, and he walks everywhere he goes, and he's also a great inspiration to so many. I saw you sharing your rings with a young gentleman tonight. You allowed him to put it on.
Right, thanks.
And you enjoy doing that for kids, right?
I do it. I love to do it for fans because fans, you know, I mean, fans are fans. I don't care what team. And so they want to share part of it. And winning a Super Bowl, you know, was part of sharing those rings, and they're not my rings, they're our rings, at the, you know, and so if it's a, and if a person comes up and he's a big Steeler fan, or kids, I mean, how many kids get a chance to wear a Super Bowl ring or to see one? So it's just one of those memory things that you got a picture that sometime down the line, you know, you can get the, you got a picture with four Super Bowl rings on, and so it's interesting over the years that I've been able to do it. I do now have fathers who come up to me and say, you know, can my son try on the rings? I have a picture when I was his age of wearing the rings, and I was very, very young then at that. But I said, and so it's kind of, I get a big kick out of it. It's kind of cool, I just think.
Speaking with the great number 20, Rocky Blyer, here on Sports Jam. Rock, the season that you and Franco went over 1,000 yards, you did not win the Super Bowl, and you guys were a great team at that point. You could have won 5 or 6.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to think that we could have. People talk about the 76 team and in the adversities that we had overcome because Bradshaw got hurt. We had a rookie quarterback by the name of Mike Krusek who took over. Franco and I controlled the games because the passing game hadn't emerged. Bradshaw eventually came back. Both Franco and now the defense, so you talk about strong defense in those remaining 9 games, you know, they shut out 5 opponents, only allowed 23 points scored, minus yards rushing. So the defense gave us an opportunity to be on the field offensively. We controlled the ball running. I get 1,000 yards, Franco get 1,000 yards, but then we get hurt in the playoff game and miss the championship game, which we lose to a very good, and I say this, a very good Oakland Raider team at the time, and who knows what would have happened, but I think we would have had an edge if we were both healthy and could establish the running game that we had all season long.
Art Rooney is the reason that you're one of the Steeler greats. He's since gone, but the Steelers are still owned by the Rooneys. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think continuity is very important, and in the Steeler organization has always been there with Mr. Rooney, and then passing on to Dan, the ambassador, and now Art II has taken over, and so that continuity bodes well for players who have been there for a period of time because it's kind of always the same people in the front, and they operate all the same. It's not as if third generation changes or needs his ego stroke. It's still very functional in consistency. You know, the owners, the Rooney family, they take care of owners' business, you know, and besides that, the only spokesperson you have is the head coach who talks about either trades or needs or wins or losses. So you don't have, at least outwardly, fighting of who's running what. So you don't, you know, so it's not an owner that wants to be a coach or a coach that wants to be a general manager. A general manager thinks it's his creation, you know, it's one person. And so from a player's perspective, that's all I concern about is I don't have to please a general manager and or an owner or an offensive coordinator. It's I got one person, that's the head coach. We know that he makes those decisions.
We lost Elsie Greenwood a while back. We've lost people like Mike Webster. You've lost a lot of teammates of those great teams. Now, that team will never be forgotten and is still considered the dynasty, the decade, maybe the best football team. Was the Steelers 70s teams the best ever?
Well, and I don't know whether it's the best ever, you know. I mean, but and you got to take a look at the game and how it changed. And you have to take a look at it maybe in that decade, you know, in that decade of the 70s, obviously the Steelers were the best of what took place. But you can't take away the changes, especially when you come up into 2000. You know, if you look at the Patriots, of when since Belichick has taken over from 2000 through that first decade, and the Indianapolis Colts, you know, people that really dominated in a free agent market, you know, and changes that have taken place, and yet had a consistency of excellence, you know, within their programs. That bears a lot in a changing environment. So, you know, you look at them and say, well, you got to put them somewhere in a category of greatness because of the change of the game, but what they've accomplished. Was it four Super Bowls? It didn't have to be, no, but they were in championship games, they were winning, they had been in Super Bowls. The Patriots had been in, you know, three at the time, and so, you know, it'd be reticent of me to say, yeah, we were the best ever. You know, how do you compare the Packers of the 60s, you know, or the 49ers, you know, of the 80s? They won four Super Bowls during that period of time. Or the Cowboys won in 3 and 4 years, you know. I mean, that was something that's really been, you know, a distinction in itself. And so the 70s, I'll take the 70s and be very happy with it.
You're listening to Sports Jam on WBGO, the Jazz Source. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest tonight is Rocky Blyer, four-time Super Bowl champion. Let's head back to the Cody Arena and find out more about this legend. Is there a Steeler player, coach, that you keep in contact with a lot right now?
There's a group of, you know, us retired guys that played in the 70s that live in Pittsburgh. So we get together more than often. So I see Franco a lot. I see Mike Wagner. You know, Jack Ham lives there. Mel Blunt, JT Thomas, a couple of the offensive linemen. That are still there. So we get together, you know, we get together a lot more. We get together more now. We talk about it because of we're all getting old.
Well, just a couple more questions. I don't want to keep you. But when it comes to watching those games over and over again, I've watched the Super Bowls that you were in so many times. You kind of forget that the Steelers were trailing in several of those moments.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do. You know, the Dallas game, 13, we were trailing. The first game, we had a 2-0 lead, and so I think we had that. Second game, it was a close game, and I think we were trailing in that, but we scored and took the lead, and then third game I got us the lead with that great catch that you talked about earlier that gave us the lead right before the half.
So what was it about
Rams
this game?
And the Rams, you know, so that was a great game for the Rams. And the Rams had a lead at halftime. And fortunately, we came back and had some big plays in the second half, you know, to cover the spread and win the game.
Super Bowl 14 is history. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the champions of the National Football League for the second straight year.
So what was it about that team in the huddle? Why did you know that you guys could do it?
I truly believe that we felt that something will happen. Somebody will make something happen. Defensively, we had the capability of making things happen, interception here or fumble there. Offensively, with Bradshaw, you never knew what was going to happen. Our game plan was set, and we had great confidence in our game plan. But Brad would always come up with a big play here or there, a big run here or there, that would give us the edge. And so there was an innate belief that, you know, we can win. I don't care, you know, if we lose, it's just because we ran out of time. But we knew that we were going to win the game.
So what do you want to say? Your story is well documented about Vietnam and serving this country and being injured and just having this wonderful career with the Steelers. What do you want to say to today's veterans or people that haven't heard the Rocky Blyer story?
Oh, you know, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, and what I tell people is that no matter who and what you do, is that we all have a story. Whether you think you've done anything or whether or not, you have. You've touched people and you've changed people just because of who you are. And that is really the power that the power that we possess, you make a difference positively and or negatively in somebody's life along the way because of your attitude in either positive or negative. You know, you can be a downer and just drag everything down. You affect people around you. So be aware, because, you know, what you create in your life and the story that you have to tell and the obstacles that you have overcome, because we do face those obstacles and we do overcome them in some nature or another, are great inspiration to somebody who might be watching what you do or what you say. So we do have that impact. And so the Rocky Blyer story is one that has been talked about and documented. You know, is it any different than any one of our soldiers out there that have lost a limb or not? You know, I came back to a high profile industry. I played on championship teams. So the story became a known more than somebody else, you know, who fought and courageously, who saved a buddy's life, who sacrificed something along the way, who came back, raised a family, made a difference within his community, is just as powerful, you know, as a Rocky Blyer story along the way.
My father, Spike Doyle, is a huge Steelers fan, obviously a huge fan of you and a huge Irish fan. So in 1966, you win the national championship. You're the captain of the 67 team. Do you think about the Notre Dame days at all?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I you know, Notre Dame was a wonderful experience. And again, it was one of those periods that, you know, you come out of losing seasons at Notre Dame, and then there's a person that comes and he changes the course and direction, a guy by the name of Ara Parseghian, who molds a team together. Because of his leadership, all of a sudden they reach a potential, and by 1966, his third season, we win a national champion, and you're a part of that, and I get to contribute to it. The star, you know, I mean, I'm not an All-American, I'm just a player on the team. But it elevated my position of Notre Dame. It taught me a lot about who I am, you know. It gave me it strengthened my faith and my belief and my system, so that when you went out, you know, later on, you had a foundation in which you could fall on. That's what Notre Dame did. And so it taught me things that helped me become a better professional football player, and taught me things how to overcome obstacles in Vietnam. So it was a big part of who I am in my life.
You've done broadcasting, business, everything you can imagine in Pittsburgh. You know the Steelers. You're 4 out of the 6 Super Bowl victories. Are we going to see another Super Bowl team in the near future? Right now, it seems like the Steelers are on a downspin.
You know, I thought they had a great team, you know, this year. I thought at the end of the season, they were probably the best 8-8 team going in, or possibly going into the playoffs. They had momentum. They finally played as a team, even though they weren't playing with starters, but that offensive line, and that becomes a key, was starting to come together. So if you sprinkle in, and this is, and I think they really have to take a look at a couple positions, but if you sprinkle in all the starters coming back, and if they can work on continuity of that offensive line and establish a running game, they'll be contenders next year. Defensively, you got a couple changes, just a couple changes. And I think one of the changes that needs to take place is they got to take Troy Polamalu out of his freedom to be able to ad lib whenever he wants to, because it burnt them a couple times this year on mixed coverages or non-coverages, and he was out of position, and maybe he should have not been. And so I think defensively those changes need to be done. But they got a core that I think within the next year and the year they need to do something. But you're right, they're getting a little old. They need some people to come in. Ben's going to be in his 11th season next year, and wide receivers, they're fine, but they're not clicking like I think they should.
Is there a running back out there right now that reminds you of Rocky Blyer?
No, they're better. They're honest to God. You know, the running backs today, and out of that one, you know, one back, you know, that most teams, you know, have, you know, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're quicker, they're faster. They've got great experience coming out of college and so on. So, nah, I, in all honesty, I wouldn't have put myself in a position to compare any. It just reminds me of a story. When Tony Dungy was at Tampa, and he had a big fullback. Give me his name.
Alstott.
Yes.
Mike Alstott.
Mike Alstott. So he was asked the question. He was asked the question. This question. He said, "How do you come? Who does Mike Alstott remind you of? You know, as a runner?" And Tony, very kindly, said, "Well, he reminds me of Rocky Blyer." Well, actually, he's bigger than Blyer. Well, and he's faster than Blyer. So obviously, he doesn't remind me of Blyer. So that reminds me. So it's tough to make comparisons of, you know, of how do you compare, you know, to, and I really can't compare myself to anybody playing today.
Tell us what you enjoy doing now.
You know, I have two young girls that are 14 and 15. They're freshman and sophomore, and I talk about them because what we do now is that on the weekends during the winter, we go and we get to go skiing. And so it's a time, you know, it's a pain sometimes, but it's a time to get away and that I can spend with my two girls, that time goes by so fast and they'll be out of the house and be gone. I got a couple businesses in Pittsburgh that keeps me busy. I'm on the road. I give, you know, speeches when everybody, you know, feels sorry for me, so they hire me to come out and do it. That's most of my times in Pittsburgh at home doing those things.
Gotta ask you, do you like jazz at all?
Do I like jazz? I do. Am I a big jazz aficionado? No, I'm not. You know, and one of my good friends is a jazz guitarist by the name of Joe Negri, who's a legend in Pittsburgh.
Handyman Negri.
That's right, who's a legend in Pittsburgh. You know, and he's always trying to get me to go to hear him play at jazz clubs and so on. And I go, you know, I love you, Joe, but I, you know, I'm just not that much into jazz.
What kind of music do you like?
I like my old 60s. music, you know, so I like the songs that I grew up with and I understand and I, you know, I know. And the great thing about it is my girls like those songs as well. So every now and then they're very kind and they play those, you know, those the Beatles songs and whoever else during that period.
They understand that's great music. That's why, compared to today's music.
You know, you understand it's got great rhythm and, you know, and brings back great memories.
One last memory then of the Super Bowl, other than your catch, which moment sticks out in your mind when Super Bowl Sunday is here? You turn on that TV and you see the Seahawks and Broncos. What goes through Rocky Blyer's mind?
Oh, it has nothing to do with the Super Bowls. You know, what goes through my mind is, yeah, I've emerged as a fan, and I think like all fans, what we're looking for is a good game. What we're looking for is, are they executing? You know, you hate to see dumb mistakes, and you hate to see miscoverages, and you hate to see drop balls, and you go, oh, or missed tackles, you know, in a game when you guys should have made the tackle or whatever it is. And so, you know, I look at this game as a great matchup. It's like the yin and yang, defense, offense, both number one, who's going to come out on top. And so it'll be depending on how you... And I don't know how they're going to do it, but what I don't want is I don't want mistakes. You know, I don't want a miscoverage that all of a sudden leads to a score. I want them to grind it out. I want them to go mano-mano, you know, and walk away with no excuses except for the fact you either won or you lost based on your effort out there.
Mano-mano. You are a real man, Rock. Everybody knows what a true, a great individual you are, both on and off the field. And it's been a pleasure having you on Sports Jam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been a special Super Bowl edition of Sports Jam with Doug Doyle. You can hear Rocky Blyer next Wednesday night on the radio at WBGO and WBGO.org when The Rock will join my other guest on Sports Jam, Eagles legendary receiver Vince Papale, whose story inspired the movie Invincible. The Rock and Invincible, all coming up next Wednesday night on Sports Jam. Don't miss it. Until then, I'll see you at the game.